You're listening to Connect Communities Podcast, recorded live in Stamford, Connecticut. If you'd like to know more about our community, stop by our website at www.connectcommunity.tv. Enjoy the message.
I have titled this message, If You Knew. No, if I knew, not you, if I knew. All of us can confidently say that we have much better hindsight than we have foresight, right? Like looking back in our lives, we're like, I should have known or I could have. So we have better hindsight than we have foresight. And I want to tell you, I can vividly remember a time when we were looking for a place to live. This was about maybe 4 years ago. We were looking for a place to live, and we currently lived in a three-story, two-bedroom, one-and-a-half bath, which was great. It had served us really well, but we had expanded. And so two more kids in the picture, and, you know, we needed a little more space. And mind you, they are girls, and so we needed another bathroom. And so we were looking, and we're like, okay, we have to look for a place, also because our landlords at the time were going to sell the place. So there was no option for us to say. We were looking, and we must have looked at over 20 places. Like, we looked at a lot of places, and rents had gone up. And the reality is we couldn't afford a three-bedroom, it seemed. Like, we looked everywhere, and we were really willing to compromise at this point. I mean, forget the wish list. Put that aside. I'm like, I will take anything that's safe, you know. And we found this apartment that was a two-bedroom, I mean, really tight. It would have been really tight. We're like, it's okay. At least it's in a gated community, right? We feel like we're a little safe, and we'll figure it out next year because we have to get out. And so, I mean, we cried. Okay, I cried. And we begged. You can't see JD crying over an apartment. I cried. We begged and pleaded with God, and we even sent a letter to the current renter or owner or whatever it was at the time. And we're like, please, we need this apartment. But we were throwing it a little under because, again, we couldn't afford the prices. And so we were outbid, and they picked someone else, and we didn't get the apartment. And I remember being so disappointed. Like, God, where are you? I need a place to live. I have three kids. Where are you? Do you not understand that I need a place to live? Like, I'm freaking out, right? And really disappointed. And like, what is going on? Why can't we find? And so fast forward maybe 2 months later, and we called this lady. We're like, let's just call this lady who we know knows a lot of people in town. Let's ask her. Maybe she knows, right? So we call her up, and that same night, she takes us to see two houses. She takes us to see the first house she takes us to is a four-bedroom, two-bath, has an office in a large yard. And we go, does she know what our budget is? You know, we walk into that place, and she says, no, here's the deal. It's the same amount of rent that you're paying now. And we're like, what? How is this possible? She said, well, the owner had been waiting for the right family to move in here. And so he had had other opportunities, but he had said no. And so, mind you, we jumped on it as fast as we could, and we moved into this place, this four-bedroom, two-bathroom place at the same amount with everything on the original wish list that we had asked God for. And we moved in, and I think about this, and I'm like, man, I was huffing and puffing. It was like the big bad wolf, God, where are you? You know, kind of thing. Like, and God is like, just trust me. Just wait a minute, and you will see that I will show up for you. Just trust me. It was like a few months down the road. I had to sit back and just wait, you know. And I think this happens to us a lot. I don't know. Think about your life. Look back in time, like in hindsight, right? If you could look back and go, there was this time where I really, really, really wanted something, but it didn't happen. Or maybe that relationship that you really, really, really wanted to happen, and then you find out that they married someone else and they're terrible, right? Or maybe that business opportunity that was like, it was going to be the solution to all your financial needs. And then you look back and you go, that was not good. Can you look in hindsight? Can you look at some of the times in your life where God really kept you from making a big mistake, but you didn't know, and there was no way you could have known? See, I think that you are here today because you are searching. You are trying to do the right thing. And I think that if you knew what to do, you would do it, right? If you knew what to do, you would do it. I think that if you knew what path to take, you would take it. Like, if you knew what God had in store for you, maybe you would have a little more patience and wait a couple of months to see his hand at work in your life, right? If you knew what to do, if you knew what was coming, you would be a much better, in a much better place to wait for it. But here's the reality. We won't always know the what. We won't always know the what, but we can know the who. And knowing the who changes everything. And so this morning, I want to take you into a passage in John 4. And I know if you've been in church for a little while, you've probably have heard this passage. But I want to read it to you this morning because she, much like many of us, did not know what was about to happen. She was going on about her daily business and doing what she normally did. And she had no idea what was about to happen that day. So John 4:4 says, "Now, he, meaning Jesus, had to go through Samaria. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about noon. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, 'Will you give me a drink?' His disciples had gone in town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, 'You're a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans.' Jesus answered her, 'If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water.' 'Sir,' the woman said, 'you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and livestock?' Jesus answered, 'Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water that I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life.'" Pray with me for a minute. God, I thank you that we can find living water in your presence. I thank you, Jesus, that we might not know tomorrow, but we know you. And knowing you changes things. Knowing you changes, Father, our perspective. Knowing you changes how we go about things. And it also changes the fact that we can be assured that you are for us and not against us. So I thank you this morning that you'd speak to your people. Speak to them. They're here to hear from you, Lord. In your name I pray. Amen. Okay, so this woman, as she encountered Jesus, right, when she came across Jesus, she had no idea who Jesus was. I mean, she really didn't know who he was. He's just a Jewish man. And I think the reason we have difficulty with foresight is because we don't know the gift of God. We don't know really Jesus. I mean, some of us have been coming to church for a long time. But if we're being really honest, we have not encountered yet the transformative beauty of Jesus, of an encounter with Jesus. I mean, I know this because a relationship with Jesus has a way of wrecking our senses, right? So, like, we begin to believe when we come in contact with Jesus and when we begin a real, genuine, authentic wreckage of a relationship with Jesus, we begin to believe things that don't scientifically make sense. Like somebody being healed. We begin to do things that are counterculture, like saving ourselves from marriage. We begin to believe that the impossible can happen. We begin to hunger and thirst for righteousness, right? There's a sense in our hearts where, like, we want justice. We want people to be loved. We love the unlovable, right? We have this sense in us that we can do something about it, and we begin to change on the inside. No one can make us change, but the Spirit of God comes in our hearts, and all of a sudden, what was normal is no longer normal, and things look different, and they feel different, and no one but Jesus can do that. And it's in the encounter with Jesus that we begin. And so I want to tell you this morning that Jesus is not a religion. He is a person. He is not a religion you join. He is a person you follow, right? And so we can't come in with this mentality that I'm joining this religion and I'm going to behave and do these things the way they want me to do it. No, Jesus is a person we follow. And in the following, things begin to happen. I also want to tell you this morning that Jesus is not your fairy godmother, right? I know this because a lot of times we come to talk to Jesus only when we need something from him. Like, hey, God, I haven't talked to you in days, but you know what? It'd be nice if you could do this for me, right? We treat him as this fairy godmother that we can come to him and ask for favors and ask him to make everything better and ask him to, you know, make the adjustments we need. But you know what? He's not a fairy godmother. Jesus is a person, a powerful, sovereign, just friend. And yes, he can make miracles happen. And yes, he can change your circumstances. And yes, he can solve the issues in your life. But if you had a friend and you came to them only to ask for things, or you knew that they were wealthy or had a large network and you came to them, how do you think your friend would feel? Do you think that relationship would last too long? So Jesus is not this fairy godmother or this wealthy friend that you hook up with when you need something for him. He cares, he loves you, and he can make things better, but he wants a relationship with you. So we have to stop treating God like he's half unicorn and half fairy godmother, right? I mean, let's be honest, we do that a lot, right? So I want to tell you this morning about Jesus. I want to spend a little bit just telling you who Jesus is. Because you know what? The base, the foundation of everything here, the reason you are here today, although we are great people and great company to be around, it is not us. The reason you are here today is because you want to know about Jesus and you want to have a relationship with Jesus. And so I want to spend a couple of minutes just telling you three things that I think it's important for us to know about the person of Jesus. Number one, Jesus is highly relational. Jesus is highly relational. See, I want you to think about some of the close friends you have. Think about how that relationship formed. Think about when you met them and how awkward it was at first. And then think about building trust, right? You had to build trust. And so you gave them a little bit of information and you took a, you know, see how they handle it. You do like that little dance with them. You know, see how they handle it. Can you trust them? Can you go deeper? Can you be more vulnerable? You know, and no relationship is formed without faith, without some form of faith. And the Bible tells us that without faith, it is impossible to please God. Why? Because those that come to him must believe that, one, he exists. So you can't have a relationship with a God that you don't think exists, right? Number two, you must believe that he is good and that he's a rewarder of those who seek him, right? And so in this relationship, you have to have a little bit of faith. You have to get past the awkward phase of a new relationship. Some of us come as like, okay, I tried Jesus, but you know, it was awkward. I didn't hear anything back, so let me just stop. Look, any relationship, there's an awkward phase. And in every relationship, you have to kind of get to know him a little, and he's getting to know you, and he's learning, he's trusting you too. So the Bible says that who is faithful in the little, he places over much. How do you think that happens? You are tested. He's given you a little bit, and then you go, can you be faithful with that? Can I trust you with that? And then he gives you more, right? It's the same thing in our relationship with Jesus. We don't automatically wake up one day and, Jesus is everything in my life. No. It's a relationship, and there's a give and take, and you walk that out with him, right? He is a person. He is a person, and we need to treat him like the person who cares, who loves us, who is our friend. Right? The next thing I want to tell you about Jesus is that he is living water. And we read this in the passage. But I want to explain to you what living water meant in Israel at the time. See, in Israel, rain doesn't fall the way it falls here. You can read throughout scriptures in a lot of the passages, and you'll find a lot of talk about a drought, right? There were droughts and seasons that there wouldn't rain. And so at that time, you would have maybe a couple of months out of the year where there would be rain. Outside of that, it was dry. Clear blue skies. The land is very dry. And so it's even more interesting we find is that when a lot of us have heard the story of Moses and leading the people out of Egypt, right? Let my people go, you know? We heard that, right? Okay. So at that time in Egypt, it's the same scenario, right? There wasn't a lot of rain. And what the Egyptians did is that they formed streams to try to get the rain from the overflow of the rain from the Nile River to water their crops. Now remember, these people lived a lot on farming, right? It was an agricultural era. So they would do they had these handcrafted means of getting their crops watered out of the Nile, or, you know, containing the water and doing everything they could to maintain their crops when it wasn't raining. So at that time, right? Rain was seen as a gift from God. What they called living water, water that fell from heaven, was a gift from God. Now, when Moses went in Egypt and he was taking the people out of Egypt into Canaan, you would think that God was taking them to a place where there was flowing water, springs everywhere, and everything would be much easier in their life. And now all of a sudden the people would barely have to work because the crops are watered on their own, which is not the case. God took them from Egypt, a land that had some setup of water, into a land that the only provision, the only water they would get was the one falling from heaven. There would be no other means of watering anything. So in essence, what God did was like, I'm taking you from a place where you're making things for yourself. And when you're making, you're having your own sense of security made by yourself. And I'm taking you to a place where you will have to depend on me entirely. God took them into a land where if rain did not fall from heaven, they would have no food. And I find that so interesting because we get into this relationship with God and we assume that now everything is going to be perfect. I'm going to be able to handle everything. I'm going to have control of everything. Everything is just, you know, I got this. And it's not that way. Jesus will invite you into a relationship with him and he will invite you into trusting him completely. He will invite you into surrendering everything that you thought you had set up as your security. He will ask you to surrender your handcrafted sense of security. And now again, God will never make you do it. God will never make you do anything you don't want to do. But he is inviting you on a journey. He's inviting you on a journey of a lifetime, an adventure. And he's inviting you to trust him. And to let go of the things that you think bring you all of the comfort and all the security and all, like, if I have my things, I'm good. You know, he's inviting you to let go of that. In this walk, he will ask you to surrender control. Now, here's what you need to know, though, about Jesus. He's not your flaky cousin. He's not here one day and gone the next. Right? He is not walking into your life and then leaving you broke and stranded. Because he took your car and your gas money and everything, right? He's not that. You cannot outgive God. You cannot give anything and surrender anything to God where he won't pour his blessing over you 100 times. That's who Jesus is. The third thing I want you to know about Jesus this morning is that he is powerful. He is powerful. In John 1:1, we find that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Right? So Jesus is not just a man that came to earth. In the beginning, in creation, he was God and he was with God. So he was there when all of this was created, when we were formed, he was there. And then in Revelation, at the end of the Bible, we find, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last, the beginning and the end. See, if we can understand that Jesus is not bound by time or space, right? He is not worried about your situation. Look, he can see things. He can see the entire picture. He's not here in this minute. He sees the entirety of your life. He is our redeemer, our restorer, our deliverer. He is powerful to deliver you from sin. He is powerful to take the keys of hell and prevail over death. He is powerful, and he has been given all authority on heaven and earth. And we will find peace when we can understand this component of our walk with Jesus. See, peace comes in knowing that whether I have control or not, he does. We need to understand that God is never out of control. He's never awestruck. You cannot catch him by surprise. He's not overwhelmed. He's not lacking in anything. Right? A lot of times we're sitting here like, Jesus is not. He is not. He's in full control. He knows what's going on. And he can break the chains that have held you back. He can heal any body that is ill. He can take care of any situation. He is powerful. He is the one who created the universe. He's the one that sustains it. And he's the one that will take care of all of our needs. It is God. But I want you to remember this. A relationship with Jesus does not mean you feel no pain. It's not a get out of jail free card. Right? We will go through things. So why do I want a relationship with Jesus? I'm going to go through things anyway. Well, because you're not going through it alone. See, you want a relationship with Jesus because you have a God who is powerful to change your circumstance, and you're not going through it alone. You're not going through it. He promises in Romans 8:28, he promises to work all things for the good of those who love him. So even if we're going through things, even if we're facing things that are unbearable, that are painful, that are miserable, we have a promise in our God that he will work it out for our good. He will work it out for our good. Jesus is powerful, and so we can pray with faith, we can pray with boldness, we can pray with courage, because he can move, because he can do. Now, I want to finish reading John 4 with you, because I want you to pay attention to another part in this conversation Jesus was having with the Samaritan woman. The woman said to him, "Sir," this is the following verse from what we read. "Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water." He told her, "Go, call your husband and come back." "I have no husband," she replied. Jesus said to her, "You're right when you say you have no husband. The fact is you have had 5 husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have just said is quite true." "Sir," the woman said, "I can see that you're a prophet. Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem." "Woman," Jesus replied, "believe me, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know. For salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming and has come when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshipers must worship in spirit and in truth." The woman said, "I know that Messiah, called Jesus, is coming. When he comes, he will explain everything to us." Then Jesus declared, "I, the one speaking to you, am he." So I find it interesting that the woman didn't know, right? She didn't know who she was speaking to. She didn't know that she was speaking to the Messiah. She didn't know that the one that was standing right in front of her was the deliverer they had been asking for. Can I ask you, do you find yourself in that place where you just don't know? Do you just don't know who you're speaking to anymore? You just don't know, like, what's the point? What's the point of all this? Are you speaking to God and not knowing that he is right there, trying to provide you with the answers, with the living water that you need? So as we close up today, I want to point out something particularly interesting about his conversation with her as well. It's interesting to me that he knew exactly where she was. She was in sin, and he saw it, and he knew it, but that didn't matter. He wasn't worried about where she had been. He was concerned with where she was going. And can I ask you this morning, or can I encourage you this morning, that Jesus is not particularly interested with where you've been. Where you've been, he has grace for. He has forgiveness for. But he is interested in where you're going. Where you're going from here. Do you find yourself in a place where things need to change, but you don't know what? I don't know. It has to change, but I really don't know what it is. It has to change, but I don't know what to do. Now, I know that some of you in this room may be thinking, I know all of this. I've heard all of this before. I've been living with Jesus for a long time. Okay? Even though you know all of this, let me ask you this. Do you have peace? Do you carry the peace of trusting that he knows what's in the future? Have you been treating him like a fairy godmother as well? That, you know, I'll talk to him when I need something. Do you feel the living water flowing from within? Because we're not called to just live, to just walk around and go, yeah, I believe in Jesus, good. It's not what we're called to. Let me ask you, do you still believe that he can heal, that he can break chains, that he can bring the dead back to life? Do you believe in the powerful Jesus that is at work, that is walking into your situation, whether you see it right now or not, but he is working on your behalf? Do you believe that? Chances are, even if you've been in this for a while, that we start to treat God like he's limited, like us. Like, if I can't conceive it, if I can't understand it, if I can't, it's limited to my imagination, to my perspective, to my understanding. Like, we put God in this box of, he could do it if I can understand, if I can wrap my brain around it. Right? But God is big. God is big and he wants to do big things. And if he's not doing it in your life, then he wants to. He wants to. Now, if you find yourself in an impossible situation, if you are here today and you go, I'm in an impossible situation, I want to tell you that you're in the perfect place for surrender. Impossible is where God starts. Surrender your life, surrender your heart, surrender your thoughts, surrender the weight, surrender it. Don't try to do it on your own. Don't try to figure out how it's going to work or not work. That's the perfect position where you're in this impossible scenario. That's the perfect position for God to come in and show who he is. Now, if your life is fine, if all things are well and you're doing good, let me just encourage you what? That you're never at a place where you don't need his living water. You're never at a place where you don't need the freshness of his spirit. You're never at a place where you don't need the active presence of God. So for you, it's the same thing. Surrender again. Surrender again. This place, this position of surrender is a perfect place for us to see the hand of God and actually live out the life that he has called us to live. It's at a place of surrender that we can experience the alive presence of God. It is not enough to wake up on a Sunday morning and to come to church and to go home and to live out your life during the week. It is not enough. Okay? God has called us to live alive inside, where his presence is working in and through us, where we're seeing and experiencing miracles, where we get to see him in the world because the world declares the glory of God. Where we get to see him acting and living in our active and living in our lives. We're not just called to do a Sunday gig. And so I want to encourage you this morning to know who it is that you are worshiping. Are you like the Samaritan woman and don't even know who you're worshiping? Can I just say why? Don't do things out of practice or ritual or because that's what religion tells me to do. No. Do it because you know this Jesus. And this Jesus has worked in your life and he has done something that you want to see happen in the world. Surrender your life to Jesus so that you could see yourself come alive. The Bible says that when we lay our lives down, when we surrender our lives, he will make something out of it. He will give us his life. And the life he's called us to live is a life that is abundant, not a survival guide 101. It's a life that is abundant. So I want to encourage you this morning, we're going to do what we do every week. We will have application time. And for those of you who like, I have a specific thing that I want to surrender, and maybe I don't know how. Because again, I'll go back to, I think that if you knew, you would.